I think it's important
for that scene to be set. What the old Navy was really like.
The prototype of the old Navy is the battleship. A very formal thing. All officers were dressed as Mr. and it was kind of the grand old era of the Navy. The a large number of people and a fairly strict discipline. I think that also the dress. The battleship has a reputation of, you know, you wouldn't go up topside without being in perfectly proper dress and all this sort of thing. I think we're far away from that right now, but there are still vestiges of it left over.
Who liked that?
The officers who are in charge of the Navy. And the chiefs were very comfortable with it, the chief petty officers. They worked themselves up. In the old days, it was not uncommon for a man to come aboard a ship and to spend his entire career on the same ship. He got very familiar with it. He became an expert, and his word was law.
This is an enlisted man, an officer never did that.
No, just an enlisted man. Well, some officers. I remember when I went on midshipman cruise in 1944 or 45, I forget which, 44 I guess, on an old, old Four Piper cruiser. The first lieutenant on there was, and the first lieutenant used to be the guy that had charge of all the deck functions. He was a lieutenant commander who had come on that ship 17, 20 years ago as a seaman.
Oh.
And never left. Now that's unusual. But a chief that, you know, feels very comfortable in the environment and completely in charge of the situation, everybody jumps when he says jump and so forth. This is a fairly comfortable thing. There's no threat to that at all.
Did Annapolis prepare junior officers for this? I guess it did.
I came to Annapolis during the war, and it was starting to change a little bit, so I don't really know. But I'd say to a degree, yes. The other thing you got to remember is where everybody came from. The Navy was made up of middle-class white Americans, predominantly Southerners, or small-town people if they're from the North.
Mostly Protestant?
Not necessarily.
Well,
they weren't.
Catholics.
They're not. So, pardon me?
Not a lot of Catholics.
Yeah.
There weren't many Jews, certainly, in the Navy.
And not very many Jewish people, and virtually no non-white. It was almost a completely white man, gentleman, and to a large degree, Southern gentleman.
Did this operate in the selection process?
Or a small town, and you can think why that would be, because the person who grew up in the city he may be interested in affiliating with the bank or something like that, but the small town person, particularly the South, this was a way to rise to the top of an organization, and with a lot of perquisites that went along with it, and to become, in your own way, somewhat similar to a plantation owner or something like that, because the captains and the admirals had all these things to go with. Pardon me, I'm sorry.
Did the selection process for the officer corps encourage this? Then?
I don't know that it necessarily did.
Automatically those people were the people who sought naval careers?
Because of the reason I mentioned, sort of a gentleman's sort of, you know, if, well, like myself, I grew up in a small town of 6,000 people. Of course, I was interested in the Boy Scouts. I was interested in the water, so, and in leadership type things. So a normal thing to do would be go to become an officer in the Navy. And of course, the Naval Academy had a lot to do. Versus, you know, what else was I going to do where I could have a career like that? And I think this is an appeal to a lot of young men. You know, I didn't have any other image. Well, my father was a doctor. That was the other alternative, is I could have been a doctor like my father, which my brother did. I think this is fairly typical. Admiral Zumwalt, same thing. Grew up in a very small town in California. His father was a doctor. I don't know why he went to the Navy.
Well, I suppose one reason people from small towns go in the Navy is they want out of that stifling small town environment, and they want to see the world. And you do get to see some of the world in the Navy, particularly as an officer, I guess.
That's right. So at any rate, that's what you end up with. Now, I think that
you come from that background that would make you, according to your story, prone to continue that naval tradition, but you've become a different person.
Well, and you're finding more and more people and today becoming a different person, I think. To answer your question, is I'm saying what the traditional Navy stuffed shirt type was, but around World War II, we started slowly but surely getting away from that. Now, you still see senior officers today that are still living in the old battleship tradition, but they're fewer and fewer and fewer all the time. Now, there,
a part of this, of course, is regarding the enlisted man, or at least the junior enlisted man, as sort of a non-person, right?
I think, well, yes and no. The division officer of 20 years ago did not have quite the complexity of systems to get under his belt that he does today. And the division officer of 20 or 30 years ago was required to keep a notebook. And you know, this is also part of the battleship Navy, to keep a notebook on all the people in his division. And he was to help them make sure that they advanced when they should have advanced, and that they were working as hard as they should be working to pick up the skill so they could advance. He was supposed to know about their families, this sort of thing, but he always held them off at a distance. But it was part of his job, and that came through the years, but it kind of, that concern for each man at the division officer level somehow or other during the 60s got caught up in other things. The other things that he had to do started becoming very overwhelming. And that's where we ended up, where we weren't doing that as much as we used to do it. Now we're trying to get back to that. To the concern for the
and of course was the positive side to it, which was, I always thought in the Navy, which was almost complete command accountability. You really were responsible for whatever, and for what you did, and for what happened on, what the guys who worked for you did too. You were responsible.
Right, right.
All the way down to the,
you better believe it,
silly business of the dent in the bow, you know. And
right.
That's the captain's fault, whether the captain was sleeping in his cabin when it happened or not.
That's true.
I always thought that was a fairly positive side.
It is, and it also, though, it has a tendency with some people to make them uptight so that they can't ever relax, and they always are afraid of that time when they're going to get that dander, if they're going to touch the bottom, this sort of thing. They, you know, in some of our leadership courses, we talk about various styles of leadership, and there's one kind of guy who dreads going to sea because it's an opportunity to run aground. But you don't see that very much anymore. But there is that sort of person that is, you know, I'm going to make it or break it while I have my command, and you know, I'm just not going to have anybody fooling around with my command and my reputation. But that's
no, it's no job for an insecure person. That's sure.
Right. That's right. And we still have some of those, but we're trying to screen that type of person out, and we don't have as many of that type of person as we used to have.
See, what the kind of thing that I don't care if all this gets on tape or not, doesn't mind. Kind of thing that I call to mind is really old Navy. I remember one time in a reasonably rough sea somewhere off the Pacific. Another destroyer pulled alongside the one I was at, and they threw over a line and did the whole damn, you know, cruise on both sides, having to do all this complicated thing and get themselves soaking wet because the captain of the other destroyer owed the captain of our destroyer a bottle of whiskey, which they just rigged up the line to send the bottle of whiskey over, and then they unrigged it and said goodbye. That was not edifying, as far as I was concerned.
That's right. What you have is, all power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, and you have absolute power as a commanding officer of the ship. And one of the big things that we're trying to do in our leadership programs right now is point out the difference between pivotal issues and peripheral issues, and your authority involves your authority should involve what needs to be done, or your absolute authority, what needs to be done in carrying out the mission of your ship. But there are people who let that authority grow to all things into peripheral issues. The most gross one I've ever heard is one of the resignation letters that we saw 3 or 4 years ago, where the guy was upset because his captain wouldn't let people put ketchup on their steak. He just couldn't imagine running a good steak with ketchup, so he just decreed that won't be done on my ship. Now, that's a peripheral issue that's got nothing to do with carrying out the mission, but the guy's in complete authority, and he forgets what his authority is supposed to cover. And this is the sort of thing that I think you say.
He's quite capable of writing a bad fitness report for somebody who puts ketchup on his steak.
That's right.
I suppose it's something to resign over. It's a kind of peripheral thing to resign over to.
It was. I mean, when you read those separation questionnaires, you got to read between the lines. But that's beside the point. The point is that this was this is a kind of thing you quite often hear. Guys will decree such and such that really has gone beyond the requirement of what needs to be of their authority that they need to carry out the mission.
Well, how about the racist part of it, though?
Right now?
No, that, you know, just by tradition. Why has the Navy been, in effect, more racist than any other service?
I think there may be a couple reasons for this. For one is the Southern leadership of the top of the Navy. And this is not to say that Southerners are more racist than Northerners, because they're not. But,
right.
But they would would welcome an all-white organization with blacks in a steward-type job. This is, you know, very similar to what they what they see through the South, and that's a fairly normal thing. That's about all that I can really attribute it to. There may be other reasons. Now, Admiral Zumwalt has a book right now that I hope he lets you read, because there's a lot of history in that, so that we have, through a contract, put together to give a history of some of the things that you're talking about.
Oh, I have read that.
You did read it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Misspells Chafee throughout.
Oh, okay. That's the one. I don't know whether there was any insight into there.
No, there was a lot of us. There was a lot of what seemed to me to be very superficial history in it, just kind of a recital of events over.
It is. It is superficial, but I don't know any more than that.
Yeah.
In other words, I can't tell you why the Navy ended up being an all-white organization. All I can tell you is the facts as you saw in that
book. Tell me one other thing, then. Just
but it was an all-white officer corps up until around 40, the mid-40s. I don't know.
When you joined the officer corps of the Navy, when you finally got to work after the academy, was there anything about it then that that all repelled you or seemed out of the way or odd, or did you feel quite at home in it?
Me personally?
Yeah, you. I'll ask Zumwalt the question himself.
He may be able to answer better than I. I don't recall anything that particularly bugged me. I was just kind of you know, make it, I don't know how to describe it. I was going to get along, and I liked the idea of the Navy, and I liked going to sea on ships. And, I don't really have anything that I could really gripe about in the very early days. Mm-hmm. Later on, I saw things about myself. But as a JO, I was on a large ship, but I got along real well on there, and
you didn't feel you were being treated too contemptuously.
Well, I wasn't. As a matter of fact, there were a couple of lieutenants that. I didn't think were too bright, but it was never a big problem because I had a Lieutenant J.G. on there that met me when I came aboard. His brother was a classmate of mine, a very good friend, and he was kind of a big daddy for me, and I stood my watches under him. And,
of course it was
so
wartime,
I got along.
It
was after war. It was 47 when I
was 47.
And I got along pretty well. The skipper that we had for 6 months of the roughly 2 years I was on there was Arleigh Burke. And he was a real fine leader. And that ship really was exciting to be on under him. We went on a 6 month cruise under him, 3 months of med training. We went through the Suez and went to Durban and Cape Town, South Africa, and Buenos Aires, Montevideo, Rio de Janeiro.
You had a cruise in person.
Yeah, and it was really a delight. Yeah. We and a destroyer went on this thing. And so I don't have too much bad to say about the early days. Yeah. Then I went from there to a small minesweeper for 6 months. One of these little 30s.
Is this a carrier or a cruiser?
I was on a cruiser. To a 36-man minesweeper, one of these 136-foot little wooden things.
Well, that'd be fun.
And that was a ball.
Yeah,
as a matter of fact, we were in Charleston most of the time. I didn't own a car. I didn't have a wife. So I took most all the duties. And we played In the evening, we played touch football and all this sort of thing, and I got to know the crew real well, and I had a ball. And then from there, I went to Submarine Force, which is a very close-knit organization, and so my operational career has always been a very pleasant one. I have been upset with some of the Mickey Mouse stuff that some of the sailors have had to go through from time to time, but and I've always helped them as much as I could, but I really haven't personally seen anything. I've seen people that I think got raw deals more than anything that's ever personally happened to me, and I would judge that's probably the same thing.
I guess the moral of the story is if you're a white male Southerner in a white male Southern Navy, it's not too bad for you.
Since I wasn't a Southerner.
Where are you from?
Ohio.
Southern Ohio.
Southern Ohio.
I would have said West Virginia, listening to you talk.
That's right, in the hills.
Across from the penitentiary in Moundsville. Okay, now this is for reasons best known to myself is helpful to me. It really is. I'd like to be able to listen to what Zumwalt says with some kind of, you know, little more perspective than I have out of my own knowledge. That's really the best I can explain the object of putting you through all this. How about now the whole problem of dealing with it? You were going to, or I diverted you. Yeah, the whole equal opportunity.
That's a pretty interesting story, which you want to get parts from him,
oh,
too.
Sure.
But, I'm not quite sure what the motivation was, and it doesn't make any difference. But somewhere along about between the 5th and the 10th, maybe it was even before the 5th, the retention study group that we brought. As a matter of fact, I can back up, I think. He talked to groups, as I mentioned, and one of the very early groups he talked to, in fact, it was recorded on a videotape later made into a movie. Did you see all the sit reps, or is he going to show you all the CNO sit reps? They're about 8 or 9 of them that were put out, which are about 30-minute movies. The very first one he did was he talked to a group of lieutenants from the Bureau of Naval Personnel in an auditorium where he just fielded their questions. One of the persons was a black lieutenant, and I think that may have been the spark that let us know maybe we should have a group of minorities as one of the retention study groups. So it was around somewhere early on, but the wives came too, I remember that. We had a bunch of junior minority officers, I think they were all black, with their wives. And they reported out to him, the secretary was now coming to these things, to the secretary. And some of the wives, in discussing some of the experiences they had, actually broke down with tears in their eyes.
They really laid it on, those big ones.
Yes, they did. And I think he did not realize, and there are all kinds of statements that he's made. In fact, I guess the best one is the quote he made in Z-66. Those were his words that were quoted, where he said, "I did not realize the degree or the depth of whatever. I thought we were doing better, and I couldn't find it." Also what he decided early on, and that may have been also at the same time he talked to that group, but I'm not really sure, he decided that he really ought to have a black officer on his mini staff. And we got one of his, who's turned out to be one of his closest friends, Bill Norman, whom I'm sure he's mentioned to you. Maybe not.
He hasn't mentioned him. I've seen his name somewhere.
Bill Norman is a brilliant black officer. He was a fairly junior lieutenant commander. His warfare subspecialty, or specialty, was a Navy flight officer, which is a non-pilot type flyer. He'd been on a couple staffs. He had worked somehow or other on a White House staff for a year or so. He'd been to Naval Academy as an instructor, and somehow or other we found out about him and got him there, ordered in as a special assistant for minority affairs. Bill worked very closely with me.
Actually, there was a Z Graham one out about that appointment, wasn't there?
That was mentioned in Z67. It said, I have appointment. And I want every one of you to have minority affairs assistance or something. Since I ended up doing a lot of things in the personnel area as a special assistant, Bill was obviously in that area. He became very close, and we worked very closely together. And then later, when I left the staff, he relieved me. Took over the whole personnel thing, and not just the minority side of it. But he arrived about the same time as this retention study group. In fact, the retention study group was working during the time that he was supposed to be on his leave, and he's kidding me because he never get that leave he was supposed to get when he came to Washington. Between the retention study group and their really